Now, I agree with AG about the cabinet decision made on March 2011 to accede to the Rome Statute. And in fact, it was my department, which was the Department of International Law and Treaties, of which I was the Director General in Foreign Ministry of Wisma Putra, who had initiated the cabinet paper and had prepared the cabinet paper. And in fact, we had, as is customary, we had sent the cabinet paper for comments to all the relevant agencies. And everybody, all the agencies which we sent to, agreed with our proposal or our recommendation to the cabinet for Malaysia to accede to the Rome Statute of the ICC, except, surprisingly, the Attorney General's Chambers, who were vehemently against it. But I'm very happy to note now, according to AG, that he fully supports Malaysia's accession to the Rome Statute. And this is a reflection of the quality of or the lack of expertise in international law in the AG's chambers at that time, 8 years ago. The Cabinet agreed March 2011, for Malaysia to accede. And in fact, pursuant to that agreement, our department then prepared the instrument of accession to the statute to be deposited with the Secretary General of the UN. Unfortunately, the Foreign Minister never signed, at that time, never signed the instrument of accession until he left office after the defeat of BN government. Now, AG has expanded on the four crimes which fall under the jurisdiction of the ICC, and this is the crime of genocide, crimes against humanity, war crimes, and crime of aggression, which, as AG has said, has been described in detail in the Rome Statute. I would also like to touch, I agree with AG that there's been a lot of lies and slander and misinformation and misrepresentation by certain quarters regarding Malaysia's accession to the Rome Statute, and which resulted in the government announcing that it would withdraw its accession to the Rome Statute, which would be a real pity. And part of the argument was that because of the main argument, and especially the argument used by the four academics, which, in our opinion, was full of errors and misrepresentation by the four academics, who, to me, were totally intellectually dishonest in giving that opinion. Now, I would also like to touch on the arguments which have been used against Malaysia's accession to the Rome Statute, which AG had touched on. And this could be countered with implications of Malaysia's sovereignty vis-a-vis the principle of complementarity. Now, Malaysia is a responsible and highly respected member of the international community. And it is highly unlikely, as AG has said, that we would surrender individuals suspected of having committed crimes of serious concern to the international community to the jurisdiction of the ICC. The ICC, as mentioned by AG, is a court of last resort, and we have complementary jurisdiction with the ICC regarding the four crimes, the four heinous crimes within the jurisdiction of the ICC. But in order for us to exercise that jurisdiction, we would have to enact the provisions of the IC of the Rome Statute into our own domestic law. We have to include the four crimes into our penal code before we can prosecute individuals, our Malaysian nationals, who have committed these crimes in our before we can prosecute them in our national courts. Nevertheless, accession to Rome Statute will not necessarily be automatically mean that the sovereignty of Malaysia would in any way be diminished, as states parties do have the first right to try individuals in the national courts. The principle of complementarity must therefore be understood within its proper and fullest context, in that the jurisdiction of the ICC would only be exercised when the state concerned is unwilling or unable to investigate or prosecute. Moreover, irrespective whether a state is a state party or otherwise to the Rome Statute, the UN Security Council, acting under the powers conferred to it by Chapter 7 of the UN Charter, may refer to the prosecutor of the ICC of a situation referred to in Article 5 of the Rome Statute, and this was evidenced by the issuance of the warrant of arrest against President Omar Bashir, as mentioned by the AG, and also the late President Muammar Gaddafi of Libya for possible violations of the Rome Statute. So, therefore, the argument that the AGOM can be prosecuted, or the argument that we will be subordinate to the ICC, does not hold any water. It is immaterial whether Malaysia exceeds the Rome Statute or not, as the jurisdiction of the ICC, as determined by the statute, may be exercised on Malaysian nationals despite the fact that Malaysia has not acceded to the statute. The conditionality of the complementarity principle regarding the state's willingness and ability to investigate or prosecute is still without doubt an overriding principle for the ICC. And regarding implications of Malaysia's legislative system, in that the vague and wide interpretations of the crimes of serious concern to the international community may give unbridled powers to the ICC in determining the jurisdiction, thus greatly reducing the leeway for states to formulate and affect the interpretation. Now, our rebuttal is that such concerns are unfounded, as it's neither the first time that Malaysia has acceded to an international treaty nor to the jurisdiction of an international body, irrespective of whether Malaysia exceeds to the Rome Statute or not. The jurisdiction of the ICC has been generally accepted by the international community, and to date we have about 124 states parties to the Rome Statute. And we need only to look at the ever-increasing numbers of states parties to the statute to appreciate the acceptance of the aim and objective of the ICC. Only by being a state party can Malaysia play a real and effective role in determining the course of the ICC. Now, what surprised me in that these four law professors who gave the memorandum to the Council of Rulers, they didn't, and they emphasized about the possibility of the AGOM as the nominal head of the armed forces being charged by the ICC for genocide, any of these four serious crimes under the Rome Statute. They failed to mention that in 1994, Malaysia acceded to the Genocide Convention of 1948. And in fact, again, our legal division in Wisma Putra was the one who initiated our accession, in that we prepared the cabinet paper, and it was again circulated amongst all the relevant government agencies for comments, and all the agencies supported our accession, and the cabinet agreed to accede to the Genocide Convention, and we deposited our instrument of accession in 1994. And what these four academics, so-called professors, failed to mention is that under the Genocide Convention, similar to the Rome Statute, there is no sovereign immunity. So, whether or not we accede to the Rome Statute, if any of our armed forces personnel or any of our cabinet members or prime minister were to order the, for our personnel, for our armed forces to commit the crime of genocide, these people can be charged. And the same argument would apply in that if the AGOM cannot be charged because he's not responsible for giving the orders, he's only a nominal head of the armed forces, and the executive orders come from the Prime Minister and the Cabinet, as mentioned by the AG. And also, the prosecution system under the Rome Statute, whereby the prosecutor of the ICC is given both investigatory and prosecutorial powers, adapted from the civil law systems, which is inconsistent with the common law system as practiced by Malaysia. The prosecutor may further initiate investigations proprio motu. Now, it must be appreciated at the very outset that the Rome Statute is a culmination of agreements and compromises between the various major legal systems of the international community to end impunity. And this was the aspiration after the Second World War, First World War, Second World War, it was the aspiration of the international community to have a permanent international criminal tribunal. Because after the Second World War, we had the Nuremberg Tribunal, as mentioned by AG, Tokyo Tribunal. And we also had, after the Balkan Wars, the UN also set up ad hoc international criminal tribunals in the form of the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia. And after the Rwanda and Burundi Wars, the UN also established the ad hoc criminal tribunals in the form of the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. But finally, in 1998, the international community sat together and agreed and agreed to the enactment of the Rome Statute of the ICC, and it came into force 5 years later in 2003. And I must say, I'm very chuffed by the fact that when they had the first inaugural meeting of the ICC, I was there as a Malaysian ambassador, and I attended, which was officiated by the then president of the Assembly of States Parties of the ICC, Prince Zayed of Jordan. Now, regarding the argument about the Agong again, we also had, under international law, there must be a direct causal link between the orders of the Agong to the persons who were given the orders. And in fact, in a case heard by the ICTY, International Criminal Tribunal for former Yugoslavia, there was a case where the president of Serbia and the generals of Serbia were charged and tried for war crimes by the ICTY. And the president was acquitted because the prosecution could not prove a causal link. They could not prove that the president actually gave the orders to the army officers to commit the war crimes. So in this case, there is no concern at all. No, we need not be worried that the Agong would ever be charged by the ICC or even by our own courts in the unlikely event that our soldiers would commit heinous crimes like any of these four crimes under the jurisdiction of the Rome Statute. Now, under Article 124 of the Rome Statute, it provides states parties may declare that for 7 years from the date of its accession or entry into force in the statute, that it does not accept the jurisdiction of the court with respect to the category of crimes referred to in Article 8, which is war crimes, when a crime is alleged to have been committed by its nationals or on its territory. This provision is to ensure that a state party will have the necessary transition period to ensure that its domestic laws are consistent with its obligations under the Rome Statute. And further, there are no norms as regards state practice vis-a-vis having domestic laws in place before the ratification or accession of an international treaty. And despite being a dualist state, there have been instances whereby Malaysia ratifies or accedes to an international treaty prior to enacting its domestic laws to put into effect its international obligations as required by the treaty. A case in point would be Malaysia's accession to the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, 1982, where despite having acceded to UNCLOS in 1996, Malaysia has yet to legislate on a number of issues, such as the criminalizing of piracy within the meaning of Article 101 of UNCLOS. So in effect, in summary, I would say, and I would agree with AG, that the concerns of the general public, which has been provoked, really, and the confusion which has been provoked by certain quarters and also by this memorandum of the four academics, are totally unfounded. And we can safely accede to the Rome Statute without any negative repercussions whatsoever. And I would urge the government to seriously consider its decision to withdraw its accession. Hopefully, well, we have not heard whether or not the instrument of accession has already been deposited, but I hope they will deposit the instrument of accession as soon as possible. And then, as I mentioned, use Article 124 to declare that 7 years from the date of accession, that it will not accept the jurisdiction with respect to the crime, with respect to war crimes under the statute. Thank you very much.